Welcome to Sex with Simmery. Frank, occasionally explicit edutainment on the most important topic of all. Sex with Simmery is not intended for children and is not safe for work unless your boss is particularly awesome. See more at sexwithsimmery.com.
And welcome to Sex with Simmery. This is Dr. Simmery, and I am ecstatic to introduce you to, all the way from the other side of the globe, Dr. Michelle Mars of Sassy Inc. How are you doing today?
Good, thank you.
And so right now, I am on the East Coast of the United States, and it is like 9 p.m. What time is it where you are?
On the East Coast of Australia, it is 11 a.m.
Ooh, so I'm talking to you in the future. It's very exciting. I'm excited because we're talking about the future today. So it's not just that you're in the future. We're also talking about the future because through your work at the University of Wellington, you've had some recent discussions about the future of sex robots. So what brought you to the topic of robots and sexuality?
Well, I was doing some research with Ian Yeoman, who is a futurist who writes about tourism. And one of the things that we wrote, well, we wrote a book together, and one of the chapters was about sex with robots in 2050 and about our interaction with robots and how by that stage it's completely possible that we'll be interacting with them on such a kind of natural kind of level that we might choose to have sex or relationships or even marry robots.
That's fascinating. Like, and it seems like, to a degree, it's already sort of happening. Do you have any examples?
Yeah. Well, there's sex dolls in the UK that I think were introduced in about 2006, 2007 at a sexpo. They cost about $5,000, and there's about six different personalities they can have, from, you know, Wicked Wendy to Reluctant, whatever her name is. So you can kind of program them to respond to you in certain ways. And they've been, you know, despite the price, they have been quite popular. There's also the movie Lars and the Real Girl, where you see someone having a relationship with an inanimate doll, in fact. And the other thing is that sex dolls have become quite popular in Korea as prostitutes. You can either have them brought to your home or you can go and visit them. So I think that we do have the capacity to have relationships of a kind with entities other than human, other than people. I mean, think about people's relationships with their pets.
Okay.
Yeah, animal.
Okay. Well, one of the things that you wrote about is sort of like a parallel future universe in Amsterdam's red light district. Could you describe for people a little bit what you envision?
We just envisioned a sort of high-class brothel where people could go and realize their fantasies and everyone, you know, would be physically perfect and all their desires would be fulfilled. So it was kind of a luxury experience, luxury tourism experience that was sexualized.
And what would be the advantages of a robot prostitute as opposed to a human?
Oh, well, I mean, the advantages would be that, you know, you're not going to catch any diseases and you're not going to give the sex worker any disease either, which is, you know, a risk if you're a sex worker. So that's something that could be cut down. The opportunities for abuse are also cut down for sex workers, which I think is very, very important because you've got surveillance going on constantly if you've got some kind of robotic. Because I can't imagine that the brothels would be only staffed by robots. They will, of course, be staffed by human beings and robots, and people would have a choice. But I just think it makes a safer environment for the sex workers and their clients. And also it means that people can have their sexual fantasies fulfilled. You know, as well as they can describe what they want to the robot can give it back to them.
So you do think, though, that we would continue to use human sex workers in addition to it, that they certainly wouldn't put people out of business?
Oh, yeah, it's not going to be a replacement. It'll be an addition, too. It'll be another choice on the menu.
And do you think that this is only going to be something that people who have a lot of money would be able to access, or is this going to have like a trickle-down technology effect?
It'll have a trickle-down technology effect, but we were just imagining, you know, if you wanted the all-singing, all-dancing, made-for-sex kind of robot, that you'd be more likely to get it, or you would go somewhere like that. I mean, I think we're all going to have robotics in our house. We're going to be able to retrofit them and put things on them and make them into sex robots if we want to. It's not going to be a really big issue, but actually having one that was purposeful for sex is going to be a matter of kind of personal taste.
I was just sort of imagining it, like thinking about technology, because there's, you know, there's so many things in tourism, especially where there's a really high echelon and then there's like the much lower rent that the average person can afford. But then when you look at technology like smartphones, they're kind of pretty much the same. Like if you have a smartphone, you probably have a similar smartphone to somebody who has a lot more money than you do. It's there's not like that many more bells and whistles. So
that's right. The hub is getting cheaper.
So it's very, you know, it's just very curious. And then, you know, the potential for abuse and for human trafficking, it seems like it would still legitimately be a problem, but it would be cut down perhaps among the higher echelon.
I think, I'm sure it would be still a problem, but yeah, a cut down problem and something for which there are alternatives.
And do you think this is a largely positive development? Are there any drawbacks to it? Any things that you fear?
I don't know. I actually feel quite positive about it. I mean, I know that, you know, we fear new technologies and, you know, there's stuff, you know, on the internet at the moment about how the internet's making us stupid and multitasking makes for less well-made decisions and all those kinds of things. But I just think, you know, it has the potential to be really good in the same way that it has the potential to be really bad. And I don't see any particular problems with it.
One of the, and this is devil's advocate argument, I'm not necessarily saying that I agree with this, but one of the concerns that people have voiced about relationships with real dolls and other inanimate objects like that is that it makes it much easier for somebody to not have to step outside of their safe comfort zone. They don't have to improve themselves as people. They never have to develop character, they have to try hard, you know, like, etc. And it ends up stunting their opportunities because they don't have a partner to challenge them. I mean,
I think that's probably an issue, but it's the same people that are staying at home and working on their PlayStation 10s that would be the same people that would continue to interact with technology. And I don't think like improvements in technology are going to make more people stay at home and be like that. I think there are always going to be people like that in the world. Maybe you could end up sitting inside all the time and not going out and meeting people, but I mean, that would have the same effect on you that it does already. So I don't think that they kind of, I think people could probably get sucked into a kind of a hybrid kind of hyper world, but that would be a particular breed of people. I mean, it's something that it's just going to be another layer or another level of kind of humanity and a way of being in the world.
And what about the possibility for couples who would like to be polyamorous or they'd like to bring in, you know, guest star?
Goodness gracious me, I mean, it depends on how you think of it again. I mean, some people think that pornography is cheating. Some people think that using a vibrator is cheating. I mean, it's a way of bringing someone or something else into your relationship, something new, without maybe kind of pushing the boundaries in the same way as you would with a real human being.
So there have been lots of representations in sci-fi and futuristic movies of robots and of other artificial intelligence that have been used for sexual purposes. What comes to mind for me includes, like, in AI, Jude Law's character is like a gigolo robot. They're like the fembots in Austin Powers. What do you think is the most realistic of these film depictions? What are we most likely to actually end up with?
I think there's going to be such a wide variety, and like you were saying before, it's going to be slightly dependent on how much money you are. I mean, how much money you have. Sorry, I mean there'll be a definite kind of have and have nots. There'll be like, I think there will be a technological divide of some kind. Goodness knows how those lines will develop, but I'm sure they will develop. I don't think it's going to be any more democratic than anything else humanity's ever done. But I think, you know, I certainly wouldn't mind some of those sex robots to be my kind of partners. They're certainly a lot. I mean, would you rather have sex with Michael Fassbender in the latest Prometheus movie or your vibrator?
Wow, when you put it that way. That's just a reminder, all you folks, to go see Prometheus.
Oh, yeah.
that's really, yeah. Okay, so now you're speaking my language. All right. Now I got to think about that. One of the things that I definitely wanted to make sure that we talk about is the concept of the uncanny valley. So,
yes.
Do you want to tell people a little bit about what that is, how that works?
Well, the Uncanny Valley, Uncanny Valley is the kind of divide people have when they do the double take, when they look at like a robot and they see that it looks really human, but then there's something about it that's not human. And so then people get a little bit kind of freaked out and put off by the fact that they're actually interacting with artificial intelligence rather than a real person.
So it's like the closer we get to making these things look human-like, the greater the potential actually for being creeped out. So you have a robot that has like a big square head and you're like, oh, it's cute. I like it. It's not scary. But then like the more it's like, right. Oh, you seem like a person, but like a zombie. You're just like a creepy person. And now I'm scared of you. So, I mean, how far can we go with the technology then, and how do we get around the uncanny valley? Like what is the engineering design solution?
The engineering designs and things are already underway. I mean, there's robot skin being engineered. There's all, you know, robots are becoming less mechanical. It's like by 2050, for example, we won't be able to tell the difference. It'll be absolutely no way we'll be able to tell the difference.
Oh, wow. That is pretty soon, and that is pretty creepy. I didn't realize it'd be that soon.
Not really. I think we'll also have to start thinking about, you know, the rights that we accord to artificial intelligence as well, because we are creating these other kind of entities, and we have to think what kind of, you know, we can't just think of them as kind of second class citizens all the time. I mean, it hasn't worked in past history, and I don't think it'll work in future history either. I mean, maybe the next revolution is going to be robots' rights.
Wow. So are you suggesting then that the artificial intelligence that we create, especially, I mean, including and also and especially, or however you want to put it, the ones created simply for sex will be given similar rights to humans?
I'm saying we're going to have to accord them some rights. We can't just, you know, can't just treat them like garbage, can we? I mean, they're going to be entities. They're going to be moving and walking in the world. There's going to be kind of a ethical responsibility to teach them to interact with humans the best way we can. I mean, I think that the best way we can do with robots and artificial intelligence is try and show them as deeply as possible how humans think.
Wow.
Because at the end of the day, they're making yes, no, yes, no, yes, no, yes, no, yes, no decisions all the time. I mean, the more information we can get them to make those decisions, the better humanity will become.
That's an interesting thought. So I've been thinking about that quite a bit. Okay. So the inclusion of these new people will be sort of the litmus test for who we are as a people. In terms of how we react to them.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure, like, my immediate thought is the way that humans treat animals. And I think how easy it is for people to say, well, they're not people. We don't have to do X, Y, and Z. And so I'm curious if then the increased humanity, you know, of a robot looking more like a human than looking like a cat or a dog would somehow afford them this greater respect. And
maybe it would, but I think also we're becoming more aware of how of the way that, you know, we see ourselves as superior to animals, but we're becoming more aware of how animals actually have quite kind of deep knowledge and understanding that maybe humanity doesn't have. I mean, I don't know if you heard the story about the guy who saved a couple of herds of elephants, and he died, and two herds of elephants came from, you know, several kilometres away and hung around his house for 2 days, and then went away again with, you know, just because he died and they somehow knew.
Hmm. It's like the dog that stays by his owner's gravesite for forever.
Yeah. It's like my granddad's cat that died, you know, at 3 years old, just after my granddad died the same day.
Oh, that's sad.
You know? Yeah, well, I know, but it's still like, you know, animals have this level of feeling and understanding that humans don't have, and I think we're coming to more understanding of those kinds of things. And I think as we come to more understanding of the fact that human beings aren't the only thing in the universe, and you know, that everything we know isn't, like, tangible, and, you know, we can't kind of measure everything, that we're going to have more understanding of you know, we need a new kind of ethical understanding, a new ethical framework in the world, because the way that we've had of, you know, making ethical decisions, kind of dribbling everything down until we find the truth, is not going to be good enough anymore. Robots can do that for us.
Interesting. Now, I'm really enjoying this very positive outlook on the future, because like my first thoughts were very cynical, which I'm now having to check, because my first thoughts were, you know, the one of the advantages of this is that if somebody's sexual desires are such that you wouldn't want to actually do them to another person, that, you know, if you want to engage in some sort of extreme BDSM that you can't find a willing partner for, or if your sexual desires include like extreme violence or even murder, that, you know, a robot would be kind of a good option. But then, you know, I don't, you know, you're going quite a much more happy direction with this, which I'm enjoying. But do you think that that is a good utility, or would that be actually just encouraging more negative, you know, abusive sexuality?
Yeah, and abusive sexuality is always abusive sexuality. I mean, you know, death and, you know, all those kinds of things.
Yeah, this is just me being cynical. Now I'm becoming very aware of how downer I was about it. Oh, this is interesting. Okay, so my producer Nathan just immediately was reminded of centaurs and people who are into that. So,
yeah.
So for fantasy stuff, I mean, you could make robots that looked like anything you wanted.
Yes, you could.
You could have your centaur. You could have your mermaid. You could have
all your fantasy.
Yeah, and then we find out what people really, really want. That would be interesting.
Yeah,
if you actually could do it, because as it is now, I mean, I'm not really sure. There's so many limitations, both in terms of like being able to ask your partner, "Are you willing to dress up like a centaur for me? Because I would like that. Are you into it? Will you be half a horse?" So you've got that drama, and then you've also got the practical, you know, so how do you do that? How do you make your partner look like a horse and then you're still able to have sex with them? And, you know, you have to be creative. But if you have a robot, there you go. You just have your centaur already pre-made for you. That's delightful.
Absolutely. Get it to claymation into a shapeshift into a centaur. Yeah.
So aside from your work talking about the future of sex robots, what else do you do for Sassy Inc.? What is Sassy Inc. about?
It's about educating people to learn how to have, you know, better, longer orgasms, or occasionally I've had people who have had kind of problems with orgasm one way or another. And it's basically kind of, it's like exercises for your mind and for your body, and also kind of developing kind of a spiritual kind of understanding of sex and how to kind of get your head to fly in different directions. And I just think if I had a robot to help me do that, it would be so much easier, because I think people often come and see me and expect a quick fix, and those people I usually would only see once, because it takes time to kind of, I mean, I've learned a whole lot of stuff from like Chinese sexual medicine, which is like 2000 years old, and stuff that's been recently dug up in archaeological digs and stuff. And it's really sort of, it's really opened my understanding and expectations from sexuality. And I've managed to teach that to a few people over time, but it would be, just be so much easier if I could just like communicate this all to a robot and the robot could just go there with people.
So like a robot's, surrogate, sort of that idea.
A what?
Like a
surrogate. Yeah.
Yeah. So like, yeah. When a sex therapist then refers their client to go, okay, so go practice.
Absolutely.
Go work it out.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I don't see people, like if I see people and they've got like real kind of psychological problems, then I would send them to someone else. But if I see someone and they just are having good sex, but they want to have better sex, those are my clients.
Okay. What got you into the field of sexology?
I taught gender and sexuality at university, and I started doing some research on the kinds of pornography that women like, and I just like kept on going down that road.
So what kind of pornography do women like?
Oh, they like all sorts of different pornography, but it's just like, you know, it's one of those genres made for men, and so there are a lot of things that flip women out of their kind of sexual enjoyment in porn. Whereas men will just tend to watch it quite indiscriminately, I think. So it wasn't so much what they didn't like. They liked a really wide variety of things, but there were some things they really didn't like. Like when it looks inauthentic, you know, cum shots in the face, those kinds of things. Oh, please. I want to taste my ass. Well, that just means you know, that the guy's fucking her badly. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. That's interesting.
Yes, it is. A lot of things women don't like, but they like everything.
That's cool. I'm appreciating there seems to be a resurgence or perhaps a first time interest in women as visually aroused creatures. And a couple of things have brought this up recently in our culture. And one example that comes to mind is the release of the film Magic Mike, where you get, you know, clearly a movie made for women, but it's a serious mainstream film about male strippers. So you have that as an option.
Oh, yeah.
So that's like to add into the huge number of films that are about females taking their clothes off. You've got this option. And then also recently I've been reading a number of articles about how the Olympics have afforded an opportunity for women to ogle eye candy in a way that they may not have. I assume they always were. I assume women were always checking out Olympic athletes, but now we're talking about it more.
Anyway.
And now there's all this emphasis on Ryan Lochte being sexy, and you know, we get to ogle the guys in little swimsuits and all the butts. There keep being all these articles about the hottest Olympic butts, and I'm enjoying
that's
this.
Right. You know, it's fantastic, and all the you know, the lycra pictures with the showing the outline of the penis underneath.
So
and also I have to say, you know, like the James Bond movies, they're always very kind of, you know, objectifying women. But then there was the one a little while ago that Daniel Craig was in, and he comes out of the water looking all buff in his pant and his little shorts. So I was like, oh yeah, that's hot. It's time they started doing that.
So we get to be equal opportunity oglers.
Yeah,
it's nice. It's for everybody. It's good stuff. All right.
Yes.
So then this immediately comes back to what we were first talking about with the sex robots. Like a lot of my first imagining were sex robots as largely female bodied robots. But then do you think that women would be interested in
women have been having sex with robots for over 100 years. I think women are going to be the early adopters of sex robots rather than men. Men are going to be more scared of it and less familiar. Women are just going to go, oh, well, that's a good improvement on my muscle hard plastic vibrator that I had by the bed. It's like having Ken doll and keeping it in the cupboard and getting it out when you want to play with it.
Touche. Very good point. So women as early adopters, that's fascinating. And so are we going to be looking at, I don't even know. I'm just very curious to see where this goes. But I want to see if these are things that people have in their homes. I want to see if these are things that they just go to a fancy place to try out. I just really want to see how this works out and what this manifests like.
No, I think it's going to be a good thing for women. I mean, women don't have the same opportunities to go to sex workers either. So I think it's going to be very liberating for the female population more than the male population.
So what are going to be the next big breakthroughs? What do you think is the next thing that's going to happen in terms of sex?
I think that technology is going to really change the way that we have sex one way or another through the internet, through sex with robots, through all those kinds of things. And I'm actually about to write a book, or I'm writing a proposal for a book at the moment about the future of sex.
So again, thank you so much to Dr. Michelle Mars. This has been super interesting. And for the people who now are like fascinated by this, which I'm sure most of us are, where can we find out more about this and about you?
The media interest in men and sex with robots started with an article in the Futures Journal, which ended up straight away sort of being the most downloaded article in the journal, and still is like a few months later, about men and sex with robots in 2050. But actually we've published a book which has got an extended version of that article in it, Tourism 2050, which was just came out. The book launch was last week. And so if you want to know more about men and sex with robots, that's somewhere they can go and have a look.
Very cool. All right. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Michelle Mars of Sassy Inc. This has been awesome. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. I'll look forward to listening to your show as well.
Awesome.
I tried to download it on iTunes, but my Android didn't like it.
Oh.
So I have to go back to my phone and try again.
Oh, our robots don't like us.
No, and my Android robot didn't like your iTunes.
Oh. Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much, and thank you everybody for listening, and have a fantastic day. you for listening to Sex with Timory. Please check out more from sexwithtimory.com, where Monday through Friday there's new content, including polls, weekly sex columns, and Friday sex links. And if you have any questions, comments, or violent reactions, please email them to sexwithtimory@gmail.com. That's sexwithtimare@gmail.com. And thank you.